People, one person said it was on Clinton, another said it was on Center Street.
But see that? No, this is not no Center Street. Nothing on Center Street had anything like this.
Well, the other thing is it may have been washed out by the flood if it, you know, in 37. Too, it's hard to tell. Maybe I might. I don't think it's going to hurt us. We need the air.
Well, I'll turn it off then.
Oh, no. Let me, maybe I can turn it with the sound. Is...
Well, it's old.
The sound. I think it'll be okay.
Well.
If it doesn't bother you too much.
No, I just don't want
to. Oh, it ain't going to. As long as we got the mic and everything, I think it'll be okay. And I'll get my parts a little bit better organized here.
Yeah, but you know where this is. I feel this building. This is a good picture of that.
Yeah, that was a beautiful building, that Oddfellas building. I think that's the back of them houses along Wilkerson.
It did look like the back of those houses. And we didn't realize how poor they looked. Mm-hmm. Well, these are good pictures. And they let you use them?
Yeah, these are not the originals. These are copies. They don't trust me with no originals, but they let me use copies, which is just, for my purposes, is just as good.
I'll get you to come back in there.
Okay. That'd be fine.
Okay.
Let me roll this out of the way here. Let's see, today is...
the second.
Tuesday, July 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
We're at the home of Miss Helen Berry to talk a little bit about Bottom. Are you a native of Frankfort?
Oh, yes. Yeah, born and raised here. Don't ask me what year. Don't tell that.
That's all right. I wouldn't ask you that year. Were you, who were your parents?
My mother was Mary Evans.
Mary Evans.
And my father was named Robert Berry.
Robert Berry. Okay. Uh-huh. Were you born down in the section of Frankfort referred to as Bottom?
Or? Yes, I was born. Let me see what street she said. It was on the Dudley Street.
Dudley?
Dudley.
Okay.
Yes.
That would have been in behind what eventually became Mayo Underwood?
Yes, it was Farm First Dudley, then it changed to Blanton Street.
Yes.
Mayo Underwood was on that same street, part of it.
Okay. What is your earliest remembrance growing up in Bonn? When you think about it, the earliest thing you remember?
First thing I remember, there was no automobiles in our area. It was all horses and buggies.
Ah.
But the people there were poor people, but everybody looked after each other. And my mother had to work, and I had to stay in homes of other people. But I was a child of the neighborhood. I went around and did for older people because I was brought up that way.
Where'd your mama work?
Then she worked for Mr. Marvin Avel. He was one of the owners of Avel Drugstore.
Ah, okay. Okay. Did most of the mamas have to work together?
Oh, yes. Most of the mothers had to work, especially unwed mothers. Yes, people worked. They either worked out as a cook or laundry workers.
Mm-hmm. Did daddies work too?
Well, my daddy, such as he was, he worked at the distillery.
Ah, well, that would have been a good job for Black, wouldn't it, to be at the distillery?
Well, it was a good job, because he had a large family on his wife's side. His wife had died when he got tangled with my mother. Yes.
Yes. And so your mama really was providing most of the support?
She was doing all the support. She had these two children.
Okay, and so she worked for the Avels for her entire career?
Or? No, after she left the Avels, she went to work for the J.W. Pruitts.
The Pruitts?
Pruitts.
Okay. Well, as a woman, what kind of jobs were available to your mama? I mean, just day work or?
Cooks. Or you either was a cook or you were a nanny or you did laundry work.
And how would you get on to one of those jobs?
Well,
family would ask for you? Or?
Yes, you always were really recommended. If you were noted for a good cook, you someone would find out, because people always entertain. They did a lot of entertaining back those days, families would, and your name was brought in that way.
Well, you told me a story before we started recording about Mama would bring home food.
Yes, we call it smother box or something like that.
Smother box?
Yeah, or anything like that, leftovers. She would bring that.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you said, that what you would get basically in the smother box was
just
food from the table.
From the table, from the kitchen, that they didn't want to eat, or if it was enough, they would allow her to bring, because they knew she had children, just enough to feed the children.
Sure. So she got that in addition to whatever wages
yes,
they were paying.
Yes, $5 a week.
Five a week.
$5.
Is that pretty much standard?
That was good money for a lady.
Well, was your mama renting? Were y'all renting a place?
Yes, $2, no, $1.50 a week.
Ah, okay. That's a pretty good amount of
yes,
$5.
Yes, $1.50 a week. And of course, then you didn't have electric. You didn't have running water. Your water was outdoors from a hydrant in the backyard.
Did you share that with other families?
No, most people then had their own water to dock everybody out in the backyard.
So you had no electric?
No, we didn't have no electric for years.
When, what period of time was this, the 20s maybe, or?
Well, it was back there in the early 20s, because
yeah.
Everybody had coal oil lamps.
How'd you heat your place? Did you have a
furnace? We had coal stoves.
Coal stove.
Coal stove or grates. Those who were fortunate, they had a coal stove, but you cooked with it on a coal stove or on a grate.
And it didn't have like an indoor tub or commode? Or?
Oh, no. Your lavatory was in the backyard.
Well, as a renter, did your landlord keep up the place? Or?
Yes, they kept it up because children were well tamed. The parents didn't allow you to tear and destroy like children today.
Yeah.
And so children were big hate children back there. With all children, mostly back in our area, had good manners.
Did you all live at that place very long, or did you move?
No,
place?
We stayed at one place, well, for a few years, and then as we just had two rooms, most people then that didn't, that was living like my mother had just two rooms. The children slept in this one room, and you had a bedroom and a kitchen. And then when things got better, she moved across the street to a three-room house.
Ah, okay. Who, was that still on Blanton?
Still on Blanton, not Dudley Street. Yes,
oh.
Still Dudley then, wasn't Blanton.
Okay. As far as your family, how many children did you?
Just two of us,
two?
A boy and a girl.
Okay.
Yeah.
You might describe your home a little bit to me, the rooms and what kind of furnishings you had and that type of thing.
Well, it was sparse because it seemed my mother was only the provider, and my brother had some relatives, and when my mother moved, when someone would buy something, well, you trade any furniture then, they would give. And I was really talking about, because I'm not ashamed, you bought oranges and bananas in crates. Our first safe was made from orange crate.
Ah.
And my mother sold, and but she was never ashamed of anything because she would have curtains and everything was always clean. Because as I tell people, the people as they call in the bottom, you could eat off of most people's floors. They were clean people.
That's a misconception that a lot of people don't
understand. They don't, we were clean. People in the bottom was clean.
That they made special paintings
yeah.
to keep their house
paint,
and their clothes.
They were clean. We were all clean people.
What kind of, did your mama insist on an education for you?
Yes, we both finished high school. My brother did attend college, but he didn't graduate.
Well, so where did you start schooling then? Clinton Street? Or?
Clinton Street.
Can you describe, nobody's ever told me much about that school. Where is it on Clinton?
It's on Clinton Street. Did you ever know about the prison?
Yeah, I know about the prison.
It was down below the prison, on the very end, almost this road over here, when you're right here by Bondi Garage, that road went into the playground on to the school.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, then. And that was the building itself about First Baptist?
It's past First Baptist. Oh, okay. Yes, because the prison was right across the street from the First Baptist Church.
Yeah.
And my first church was down there behind the prison wall, First Baptist Church.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I didn't realize it. You mean right adjacent to the prison?
Yes, our First Baptist Church wasn't there. It was down Alton Street, a little church. I have seen pictures. I don't know who would have a picture of that.
I'd be very interested in seeing the picture. Mm-hmm. Very interested. So when did you switch over to going to Mayo Underwood then?
When the school was becoming dilapidated. That's when it was 29 or whenever they started building on the Underwood, because I finished in 1930.
Ah, okay.
And then we went there in 29 and I finished in 30.
So you really attended Mayo Underwood for just about a year?
A year. It's all a year.
Mm-hmm. And the name Mayo Underwood, can you tell me about Dr. Mayo?
Well, he was the principal of Clinton Street School.
Oh, okay.
And he was male, and of course the Underwood was a doctor, Dr. Underwood.
He's a long-time physician.
Yeah, physician.
Mm-hmm. Well, as a young girl growing up in the bottom, what kinds of things would you do for recreation? Did you have a place to go? Or?
We played in the streets. We played ball. We played marbles. The girls played marbles, whether it's the boys. And we played games, and it was all kinds of games that the older children played that didn't allow the younger children because they were kind of rough.
Yeah.
But everybody was congenial.
Could you play on the sandbar? Some of the boys mentioned the sandbar was
The sandbar came later when Mayo Underwood School came down there. The sandbar then was down there. Now, on Wilkerson Street, I guess they told you about the Follises, John Follis. Well, I was telling the girlfriend, Ms. Gold, we reminisce quite a bit. I used to, because a lot of my people lived on Wilkerson Street, I played with more white children than I did with colored children because we all played together.
Well, that's a question I wanted to ask you. Bottom, there was whites living in Bottom.
There was whites living there, and everybody was friendly. The whites would take up for the black. Nobody didn't come in there and do anything because you had protection.
Everybody looked out for everybody.
Everyone looked out for each other.
Would it be fair to say that most of the folk lived down there were poor?
A lot of them were poor, and I could say they scratched for a living. You did anything, and some of them that had distillery jobs, some of them was porters, they worked in drugstores, but then it's just like still now, they bootleg just like that was the living.
Yeah.
Bootlegged.
Yeah, I remember a woman that's been Nanny Oliver.
Yes.
Mentioned that she made some money that way, and well, Follis was a bootlegger.
Oh, Follis was a big bootlegger, but he was good to black people.
I've heard so many people say that.
He was so good.
Did you meet him? Or?
Sure, I knew him. I played with his children.
Oh, Bixie and Carlos.
Bixie. Well, Carlos was older, and there was the Lassie. That was one of the boys, Lassie.
Yeah.
I can't think the girl's name right now, but we played together.
Ah, so
and Chester Snellens and the Snellens, they all lived there. But I was telling the girl a few minutes ago that I can't recall who had an alligator in the yard up under the house. And I said, my mother would have killed me today if she knew it. I said, we would jump in there, the alligator would snap at us, and we would just jump out before he would grab us.
You mean had a real
alligator? Yeah, a real alligator, yes. And we would do that, and we played together. And we was talking about reminiscing. I said, Chester had a restaurant up on Broadway, and he would get these tickets to the Derby. I said, every year he would come by and give me a ticket. I didn't have to pay to go to the Derby because he was still
Chester
friend.
Chester Snelling?
Was still friend. And when he would see me on the street, he said, Merham. And we was just standing there, and I tell you, Ben Conway.
Yeah.
Well, Ben Conway, I haven't seen him. I don't know where Ben Conway's still living.
I have no idea. He's not the police chief, was he? That was Conway.
Well, now he might be related to him.
Oh, okay.
But Ben Conway worked in a grocery store, Alonzo Lewis's grocery store.
Yeah, I've heard of Alonzo Lewis.
Well, then they were nice people. Yeah. And see, they catered to all the people in that area.
Mm-hmm. Well, you had mentioned not having anything in the way of an automobile. Yeah. How did you get around? Bicycle?
Well, we walked.
Walked everywhere?
Everybody walked.
So you had to live close to where you were?
You had to live close. I don't know, people didn't pay attention to walking because we were talking about the weather. They had snows then. And this heat now, people are raising sand about, it was always 100 most of the time.
Yeah.
And you didn't have screens or anything in your window. You didn't have flies because people were clean. And you didn't pay no attention to it. People now are just living and they can't take nothing.
Well, we're so spoiled and used to all the conveniences. I imagine you all didn't have a refrigerator in your home.
No, icebox.
So you had to go get ice from...
Ice all the time. And
Fred Sutherland's.
Fred Sutherland and their cold.
Yeah.
Because my mother, we had a sled. She would put the tub on the sled, and my mother, they knew us. And he would say to the men working, throw 2-3 extra lumps. And you would get a tub of coal for a quarter.
Ah, okay.
And
I have to get you through maybe a week.
A week.
And you probably had to get groceries every other day or
well,
two or three
my
days.
Mother ran a bill at Lonzo Lewis's grocery, and we all the children, you know, children don't care if the bologna or goose liver or something like that or jelly.
Yeah. Somebody else told me that it was real important to have credit for businessmen to let you have credit.
Yes, they let you have credit. All you had to do is tell who you worked for.
Okay.
My mother would work for the Averills. They knew it, Mr. Averill. And my mother, since she was a good cook, she started making bread and things, and I had to peddle them. And most of my, all my customers were white people. When they say, little girl, who made this? I said, my mother. Well, who's your mother? I said, she worked for Mr. Marvin Averill. That's all I would have to say. And boy, when the food was all over, that's where my mother dressed my brother and I, and that's why we was able to live better.
Selling that bread.
Selling bread. Means
she made. Were your customers down in the bottom, or did you sell in South Frankfort?
No, they was all Clinton Street, all the I tell you who was one of, I can't think the man's name, he worked at the drugstore, and the Schultz, I think their names, they lived on, they were all white and good living.
Yeah.
They would buy, and then they would have friends and on, and street all in that area where the white people live, good living white people, that's where my trade was through there.
So you would go door to door?
Yes, peddling, but after that, it didn't take long because our name was established and they were hot. Little girl, get me some of that bread I hear about. I said, which kind, the brown bread or the nut bread? How do you sell them? I would tell them, I want a loaf each one. And my mother would, sometimes I would have been there working with her because that's the way I learned to cook.
So she'd cook up that bread in her kitchen?
Yes.
How old were you when you were selling the bread? Were you
well, I was going to school. I wasn't in high school. I was about 9 or 10, something like that.
Yeah. And you're pretty young having to help make a family
well,
make ends meet.
Children had to do that. My brother would deliver clothes for people because all people in that area, they did laundry work for rich white people. And I would go along because my brother, he was oldest, but he was no fighter. I was a fighter. And I had to take up for him. You let no bigger boys take the money from him. See, boys, always some scoundrels standing around, rather don't want to work, but take them.
So you'd have to protect your brother from...
Protect my brother, yeah.
As a youngster growing up, was Bottom a violent place?
No.
I mean, did you have to be afraid for your children, let them play?
No, only thing you had to be afraid of was the horses. Sometimes the horses would get wild. And then they would have this day called County Court Day here. Did anybody describe that?
No, nobody's ever told me about County Court.
County Court Day was always on a Monday. And these people, this is called the County Court, they would come with the cows and the horses, and they would put them all down on Clinton Street. And down there, off of Wilkinson Street, that's where they would do all, they would sell all these stock.
Ah, okay.
And that's when people were afraid. They were children because the people claimed they were all white. They would be drinking. They would be rough. And then I'm going to say like it is, low end of Clinton Street, that's where they had a lot of assignation houses.
You mean red light?
Red light, that's what you call assignation houses. And these men, that's all they become. I don't know where they come from, the country where, but they would get drunk and you just see the people there because they would have the money.
Money, yeah.
And they would
go wasted on women and booze and whatever.
Yeah. At the old time, we would be afraid because those in that area, but where I live, I had friends on Clinton Street. I wasn't allowed to go around there during that period because of a cow or some stampede, you'd be in the throes over here.
You'd be hurt bad. Well, I've heard that. So many people have told me that violence came into the community, not out of it. People came in, liquored up. And
that was it.
And they go to a joint, maybe get blitzed, and then there'd be trouble.
There'd be trouble.
But otherwise, some people said we never had a lock on our door.
You didn't know what it was to lock your door. You didn't know what it was to have a screen. You could go to bed, you go anywhere, go out of town. Those who was able to go out of town, you would come back, your house would be just like you would leave it. You didn't have no robbers, anything like that. Everyone looked after each other.
Well, and the houses were
close
together. Yeah. And there was people have told me there was a neighborliness.
It was a togetherness. Everybody was together.
What brought them together? Just being poor?
Close? It was just like, I don't know what you would call it. Just say, we just like a one big family. Mm-hmm. Everyone knew each other. And we just close. We'd stand. And then just like this hot weather, you didn't have no electric. People would sit out on the porch till it would cool off, and they would talk to each other till 11. And it would just be fun to hear them say, well, my mother's name was Mary Emily. Mary Emily, it's time to go in. I think we can go to bed. You had fans, or you didn't have fans. You had newspapers. You done pleaded to make a fan. And that's where people enjoyed themselves.
Sit out on the street and talk and share.
Share on the corners. Women would come from church or would get off from work. They would meet on the corner and share the news. And it would be fun. And the kids would be sitting there. You weren't allowed to, like the children today, take the conversation away from the adults. You had to be quiet.
And so the ladies would gather on a corner and just sort of review what happened during the day.
That's right.
Okay. Well, one of the things Papa Jazz, in an article he did in the newspaper, said, we knew more about what was going on in white society than the white, because we were there in their homes.
True, because you saw what was going on.
And I think that sort of irked him that people talked bad about the people in the bottom when the people in the bottom knew a lot of stuff was going on.
Listen, what I got to say, my auntie worked in the assignation house, and she was crippled. And she was my mother's older sister. And as a child, I went into a trunk. I never saw such beautiful jewelry. And I said, Mom, whose beautiful jewelry is this? She told me. I said, where did we call her sis? Where did sis go? She said, from where she worked. Because at that time, I didn't know what an assignation house was. I said, where she worked? She says, well, the people being a hurry, they leave. She didn't want to come around and tell this child what it was all about.
Man.
And of course, they had too much trade. They would be afraid to come back and ask, did I leave my watch? Did I leave my pin? I'm telling you, it was some beautiful jewelry.
Great. Yeah. Let me be sure I'm pronouncing Assignation.
Assignation. Assignation House.
Okay. Well, let me ask you, everyone that I've talked to has a nickname, and it seems it's important that you have a nickname.
I hate them.
You hated them?
I hate nicknames.
Oh, like
because
Corn Pudding, Dole Belly, Black
Cat,
Shine Boy.
I didn't like it because a lot of times people die, you never didn't know the real name.
Well, nobody can tell me Shine Boy's name. Nobody remembers what his name is. Doughbelly, they don't remember what Doughbelly's name is. And they just can't think of it.
Now, the one lady, she should know what Doughbelly's name because she lived there in his house. Mindy Martin.
Mindy Martin.
M-I-N-T-I-A. Mindy Martin.
Mindy Martin.
Because, sir, they lived in Doughbelly's house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm still collecting names of people to talk to. But that's so funny that it's almost like a nickname. It sets you apart, but if you want to be part of the crowd, you got to have a nickname.
Well, a lot of these nicknames came from because whatever you portrayed.
Yeah.
Now, Papa Jazz, I don't know where he got that. I don't know where he liked jazz music or something. I didn't know why he got it. But see, when we all grew up together, I called him brother, just like his sisters, because we all were close.
Well, let me ask you about the name Craw. You have a whole different theory on how the name came about than anybody else.
Yes.
Can you tell me your theory on where Craw came from, the name?
Well, it's like I said, that this, they said it was a man named Craw that owned, just like John Buckner, owned a lot of homes in Craw. They say, go to Craw and he will find your house. And that's what they say, that's where it came from. And then when these crawfish will come up, that's where it got it.
Well, do the people who live down there, do they tend to use the name Craw, or did they call it Bottom, or did they have
we called it Bottom because a lot of them resented the word Craw after we heard so many slandering remarks.
See, I made the mistake of using the word Craw with Anna Mae McLean.
Well, she's touchy.
Oh, boy, and she ripped me a new one.
She's touchy.
And we patched it up. She
she's a peculiar person, anyhow, I hate to say it.
Well, she wrote me a 3-page letter, and she wrote a very, she said, I remember as a girl that the whites would come in early in the morning with their laundry in the car, and they'd honk the horn. They wouldn't even come to your door. They'd honk a horn.
You'd have to go get it.
And then you knew what time they was coming back, and then they did. And she remembers people coming to collect the rent. As a little girl, as a white lady that was dressed real fancy, come by and get the rent.
Yes.
So I learned right then that I better be careful about using the word Craw.
Well, I don't pay attention to it because it doesn't bother me, because I didn't call myself living in Craw. Craw was an area from Clinton, from Broadway down. Miro Street wasn't in the Craw area.
See, that's another thing. Can you sort of define Craw, boundaries of
Craw it? Was, I would say, from Miro up to Washington Street and a certain area of Clinton Street. That was the Craw. From Wilkinson Street over to Washington, well, let's see, Gaines. I can't think that little street. Madison Street, that was where Craw ended.
Okay. And the rest of it was Bottom, really?
No. Craw and Bottom the same.
Okay, see, that's another thing some people don't agree on. Remember Anthony Thomas? Tony Thomas? Anthony Thomas? White guy? Old white guy. He said, well, Craw is one thing, but when you get over to Blanton and Miro and you outside the Craw, then, he said, you're...
Well, maybe they did, but we just say the Bottom. Every time we go, my mother said, where are you going? I said, going up the Bottom. And then we said, up in the Bottom.
Up in the Bottom.
Up in the Bottom.
Well, that's... I never heard the story about a man named Craw. When would he have been around? In the turn of the century?
Turn of the century, because I didn't know. That's all I heard. Of
you never met him, right?
Oh, no. I didn't know him, because after that, before John Buckley, I didn't know Doolin Moss.
You knew Doolin? Nobody ever talked to you yet.
Well, see, Doolin Moss, we lived in his home.
Ah.
Yes. Now, he was working for the State Journal.
Yeah.
And he was a kind white person.
You have good thoughts toward Doolin.
Good thoughts. Mr. Doolin Moss would go to bat for you, and he was just nice. I don't care what nobody said. Doolin Moss was a nice guy.
See, the other side of that coin, some say, well, he didn't keep his places up.
Well, he did not, but he was a carpenter, and he would go and knock a nail in there and do for you. But he was fair. Now, to us, now, I don't know, because we never owed it. Now, see, there's a lot of things. If you owe somebody, they'll have something to say.
Yeah.
A lot of people try to beat you.
Yeah.
My mother and I, we believe in paying our bills. That's
so you never got into any cross purposes?
No cross purposes.
Let me ask, as far as when you got out of school, what was your aspiration? What did you hope to do when you got out of school?
Well, I had always wanted to be a stenographer. And then my aspiration, I had wanted to be first a dancer. Yes, ballerina, because I was very casual, and that's what I wanted to be. Then I said, could it be that I would be a stenographer? Then my next was a beautician, and that's what finally I ended up with.
How did you get into the beautician work?
Well, as a child, I always liked to go, and I learned to do hair.
Who taught you how to do the hair?
My mother. I saw how she fixed my hair, and I learned to do it, and then the kids would trust me, and then I was making money. And we laugh about it now. See, it was a curl called twist curl. We do that for 15 or 30 cents, and you get your hair pressed because you had to wash your own hair. That would be I said, now I wish somebody would come here and ask me to curl the hair or compress it for that price.
Did you have your own beautician shop? Or?
We didn't have no shops. It wasn't like it is today because there was no licensed beautician.
Oh, you people didn't have just, to, you just did it?
People just did it because I was a child going to school making money.
Oh, you were doing beautician work? Are you still going to school?
Yeah, I was going to school. I was doing work and going to school. Kids were coming on a Saturday and get the hair fixed.
Ah,
okay. And I was making money to go pitch a show. This show was only a dime then, and anything else I wanted to do.
So you were working out of your home then, I guess?
Yes.
As far as dating and going out with fellas, did your mama have some strong, hard, and fast rules?
Yes, she had. All parents then, children were really brought up. Those children, just like children today, there's always a loose bunch, and there was children who obeyed the parents.
Yeah.
My mother was strictly religious. We had to go to church. And if I had a boyfriend, if he didn't like the church, I didn't keep him, because he had to go to church with me.
And so he had to approve of your church?
Yes, he had to come to church.
Where'd you all go to church?
First Baptist.
Okay. Were there women's organizations in the church?
Yes, they had organizations for children.
What kind of?
They had a BTU, junior BTU. They had children's Sunday school classes. Because I started, it was a lady across the street, Miss Jane Condy. She worked in a church. I've been going to Sunday school since I was 4 years old. Carrying me, and as I tell children today, wasn't allowed to chew chewing gum and look back. When you there, and I was reading when I was four. My mother taught us.
So she educated you in the home as
yes,
well as
yes,
going to
yes, school.
Your mama was an educated woman then.
Well, no, but she just meant that we weren't going to be stupid. And my brother being older, when he would get his lesson, I would sit there and listen, and I would get in with him. And I was learning along with him.
So your mother really took a lot of extra time and
mother,
care.
She was a mother.
Yeah, a true mother in every sense of the word.
Yes.
But when you think about your involvement in the church, was the church a social center for the community?
It was.
How did it serve in that?
Well, we had programs. Always was something to do. When we would leave Clinton Street School, it was always some kind of program for the children. We would stop by, our parents knew, and practice. Always something going on.
Like a play?
A program for the church. And it was always something for the children to do.
Could women take leadership roles in the church?
They better. They always.
Like ushering or
they are the leaders still.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, it's so funny. I'm a Baptist. I go to the church right down here, Memorial Baptist.
Oh, you do?
But women, they don't allow women to usher or be a deacon. Did you all have women serving in those capacities?
No deacons, but we had women ushers.
Ushers.
But we had women that was head presidents of clubs. They presided. But I don't believe in women preachers or women deacons.
Oh, really?
I don't. Because I'm just funny because I'm strictly by the Bible. I think that's a man's job.
Yeah. What are some of the other churches that were down in there? Corinthian Baptist?
Corinthian Baptist was on Muro Street, and then there was always the Holiness Church. And
where was that?
The Holiness Church, when my auntie kept me, it was on Clinton Street there. It was two doors. It was a grocery store. Then this lady was a lady preacher. And it was Holiness Church. Then they moved from there on the corner of Clinton and Washington Street.
The lady who was the preacher, do you remember her name, a chance?
Well, the first lady preacher I remember, we called her Sister Lizzie.
Sister Lizzie, black woman?
Oh, yes, we were all blacks, yes.
Oh, okay.
And then another, later on, it was a lady named Sister Lizzie, Sister Ross.
When were Sister Lizzie and Sister Ross heading the church? Do you remember?
I'm nothing but a child, not even a teenager. All this happened years ago.
Maybe late teens?
Late teens or 20s, something around in there.
Now, would this church have been synonymous with the same church as the Bethel Temple, or is that a different...
Well, a lot of, I think Bethel Temple came from this because all we just knew as children, it was Holiness Church.
Holiness Church.
It's Holiness Church. Yeah, we didn't know whether it was a name to it or not, but we just knew it was Holiness Church.
Well, someone told me that they get a lot of preachers and evangelists to come down in the bottom and go from house to house talking and preaching.
Well, they would have Jehovah's Witness that would do that, and they were the ones, and then just like on Saturdays, the Salvation people would come there on Clinton and Washington Street and hold service.
Where? Was there a vacant lot there?
No, on the corner.
On the corner?
On the corner.
Several people have told me they remember the band, there would be a Salvation Army.
Yes, Salvation Army, and they realized they called it, I guess they thought it was a den of thieves or whatever it was, they would come there.
I'm here like a soaked hog. And you say they would actually get a collection from the
Yeah, they sure, they would take the plate and have to go around the tamarine, what you call it, and they would put money in it, yes.
Well, let me ask a few other things here on, as far as marriage, were most of the young ladies encouraged to formalize their relationships, or was it acceptable if your man just lived with you? You didn't have to go through.
Well, that was a part of my life that I never was a meddlesome person. I just, whatever I saw, I accepted it.
Yes.
And I didn't see too much. Well, I guess I realized as I got older that these people weren't married. Mm-hmm. But as a child, my mother, I tell you, she tried to keep us away from that.
What was it, a stigma? If a gal was living with a fellow, did the community sort of...
No, they didn't ostracize them or anything like that. And the only stigma was when a girl become a pregnant.
And had no husband.
No husband. And then, I hate to say this, I hope all this is not being recorded, they would do away abort.
Yes. Well, and that's... I haven't really discussed some things because I felt like they might be too sensitive or bring up hurtful memories.
Sure.
But I'm sure that there are physicians who would help or maybe a midwife.
Midwife.
Were midwives common? Did they have gals that everybody turned to?
Seemingly, I never did understand because I my mother kept us from a lot of this. It took me years before I realized what was going on. When a different one would say, oh, she's out of school, she has a cold, because it was cold winters, and all children suffered. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize until I was out of school what was going on.
Yeah, but they might be with child.
Yeah, that's what it was. I found out later.
Well, let me go on here a little bit. When you got married...
I've never been married.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, never been married.
Somehow I hooked you up with John Berry. No, okay. That was my mistake. Okay. No, I had... I'm sorry. I got you mixed up. My problem. When a gal did get married, were they encouraged to have sort of a formal wedding ceremony at a church?
No, they weren't able to have that back then. They just got married.
Justice of the peace.
Justice of the peace of the preacher. And they would go to the preacher's house, and the preacher come to their home and perform the ceremony. And that was that. It wasn't no big outdo wedding unless you had the money.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, I've heard that people like their grandparents and relatives would live maybe in the same building with them in an apartment, or live in the next house or...
Next door or something.
Did extended families live close together?
Now my grandmother lived in the radius, right? It was like a community thing.
Yeah.
If my mother lived here, my grandmother lived around the corner.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I know several people have said when urban renewal came through and everybody had to scatter, big families went everywhere. You just couldn't stay together like they used to. Let me mention some names of women that people have... I don't know very much about these women. If any of the names stick with you or you have a remembrance, if you'd share it, it would help. Anne Graham.
Well, she's with her sons now, you know.
Lives with Paul, doesn't she?
No, Jimmy.
She lives with Jimmy?
Lives with Jimmy.
Somebody told me she had had a stroke and wasn't in the best.
Yes, she's not in the best. Anne had a heart condition. And so she's living with her son, Jimmy, out in the, where he lives.
I think I may have saw her when I interviewed Jimmy. I saw an elderly black woman there on the couch watching television. That was probably Ann.
That was Ann.
But they said she used to be a seamstress.
Seamstress. She worked in Catherine's shop, and she could really sew.
Yeah, everybody would come to her for alterations.
Or
she'd know what kind of dress she liked, and if it came in, she'd get a hold of you.
Yeah.
Miss Ruby Jackson.
Oh, that's Ruby Handy.
Handy?
Yeah, Ruby Handy. Yeah, she was a friend of the family.
Ah.
Yes.
Okay. What, do you have any remembrances of her?
Well, she ran with my auntie. She was a very loving, caring person. And she's out of her descendants were mostly Indians. She was a descendant of the Indian, Indian family.
Okay.
Because as a child, every time I turn around, my grandmother would say, I got to go around to Mary Handy, so-and-so has passed. And I go around there, there'd be an Indian laying up in the coffin with his regalia on.
Huh.
And I was afraid of dead people there, but I just knew that it was an Indian.
She had a lot of Indian blood.
They had a lot of Indian blood. They looked like Indians.
And she was a friend of your aunt, she said?
Yes, one of my aunties. They ran together.
Mama Bryant.
Yes, That's where Annie Mayer, she reared Annie Mayer. Yes.
And that's where I got Mama Bryant's name.
Yes.
From.
Mm-hmm.
And she was supposedly a woman who, I guess like you just said, took people in and took care of them.
Well, she had other children. Now her children, you mentioned the name Will Castleman.
Yeah.
One of her daughters married Will Castleman.
Ah, okay.
And then one of them was married to Squeezer Brown, one of her daughters.
Okay.
And so she was a good church worker, and she cared for people. She was good.
Are either of those daughters alive?
Oh, Lord, no.
They've gone on.
All of them. Yes.
Long gone. Mm-hmm. What about Ida Howard?
Oh, Ida was white.
Yeah, she's a white girl.
Yeah, she's white. Well,
she was a woman of questionable reputation.
She was one of the ladies of the night.
Yes.
Yes.
And she ran with Follis.
She ran with Follis, and she struck it good. She bought a home out on East Main, and a lot of my black friends out there was talking about she was a good neighbor.
Yeah.
She was, because she lived around the corner from us, and she was just nice.
It's funny that even though a person might be mixed up in something that society has passed judgment on, like gambling or bootlegging or prostitution, I've heard people say favorable things about these people.
These people were nice. There was two other outstanding prostitutes down there. They was called, I can't think of the names right now, but they were nice to color people.
They're white gals?
They were white. And they would just stop, and they always had something nice to say to you.
They were pretty much part of the community.
They were part of the community.
Not ostracized.
Because they knew they were, I tell you, I hate to say this, they brought their stuff down in the black area.
No.
Because they knew they could not live what they were doing in the better area. Yet they were making money.
Yes.
They were making money. But we didn't pay on taxes because as long as they take care of their business, they wouldn't bother the rest of us. And they were nice, the children. And
yeah, and that's sort of a pleasant thing to me. I don't sense a lot of judgment.
No.
Being passed on people because maybe you're doing something society considered wrong.
That's your business. You have to live with it yourself.
Nell Sullivan. Sullivan's Grocery?
Yes, Nell. She lived right here on the Ann Street before she passed.
Oh, she's gone on now.
Yeah, I think Nell is gone.
She was a black gal?
No, she was white. She was heavyset white.
Miss Helen Holm.
Helen Holmes?
Yes, she's still with us now.
Yeah, but I don't see where she would come in.
Well, she doesn't. Well, these are just names of people.
Yes,
she was a leader.
She was a leader, but she didn't have no parts of this area.
She didn't live down there.
No, she came here living on the East Main. Where would she live? I didn't know where they lived.
I guess the reason I mentioned her is it may have been Henry Sanders, I can't remember, said she was connected with the NAACP chapter.
Yes, she was with them, because Henry worked with them. I used to work with them too, but I used to attend the meetings rather, but Henry worked with the NAACP.
Well, since we're on, did you participate in any of the activities, the young people, when they'd go to the restaurants and try to get service, or
go up to the pool and try.
No, I didn't believe in that.
The integration?
I didn't believe it. I says, this but all, I'm funny, I tell you. I says, if they don't want you, don't push, because that's where you're going to have the war.
Yeah.
And I see, because when they went to the restaurants, and I have seen them sling the stuff at people, because I had that to happen to me in a store. In a 10-cent store, the girl stood there and talked, and she saw me standing there. And the lady was telling, she said, you have a customer. She says, let her wait.
Because you were black.
I was black, and so when I had what I wanted, because I was going to make a dress. I had some pins, and I had some thread. So when I saw the floor walker, I knew her personally. And so when the girl finally came, turned, I handed her the thing. Instead of her handing me, she threw it at me.
So how did you react to that?
I'll tell you what I did. I have a temper. I threw my money at her.
At her.
I had the correct chain. I just threw it. And it was 30 cents. Something fell on the floor. And just then, the floor walker walked up there. First thing I thought, she was going to have me arrested. She said, I would look at you. She said, you come in here all the time. You're nice. You smile. You always have something pleasant to say. She said, she won't do this anymore. She fired the girl.
So she stood up for what was right.
She stood up right because I was patient, didn't say anything. I was standing there with a smile, waiting for her to do it. And then she just snatched him and pitched him. And when she pitched him, I pushed the chains on.
So when you encountered prejudice, you mentioned one form that it took. Were there other forms of prejudice that you encountered coming from the bottom and being black?
Well, as I said, you know, I had worked before I started being a beautician. I had nursed different children. And when you work for people that's got money and nurse, you have a good name. And then when I would go places, and then, as my mother had taught us, you pay your bills, you get good service, you get good credit. I would go places, and they would say, oh, I know who you are. You have a good name. I didn't have too much trouble.
You didn't have trouble that others might have had.
Yes.
Miss Nellie Harris?
Yes, she was a neighbor. Yes.
Worked for Carruthers.
I didn't know she worked for, because I knew Miss Nellie and her father, Henry Harris, and everything, because they had a grocery on Washington Street, and he drove a wagon.
Yes, okay.
He had a horse and buggy, horse and wagon team.
Grace Sarvin used to run with a man they called 20 Grand.
No. Okay.
Eva Cox. I tell you, I am not a judgmental person. We share that thing. They said Eva would sell baseball tickets. That's one way she'd make money. She'd go house to house selling baseball tickets.
And then she took bets.
She'd take bets on the
yes.
baseball.
No, horses.
On horses? Oh.
Yes, because I played the horses.
Ah.
She worked for, LaFontaine.
Okay.
LaFontaine had a place on St. Clair Street. And he had the betting place upstairs, I heard. And she took bets up there to him.
Oh. Okay.
She would go around, you tell your bitch and put you off, and she would put the money into him, and then if you win, she'd bring you the money back to you.
What was the name of his place? Was it a honky tonk?
It was a beer place. It was, all I just knew, LaFontaine. He has, his family still over here on Ann Street.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he is.
Who's his people?
They over there, they're in the telephone directory.
They're LaFontaine, is
yeah,
the name.
Yeah, so
okay, I might give him a hug sometime. They said Miss Cox also raised bulldogs.
Yeah, I didn't know, but my dad was in the house because she wasn't clean. She come to your house, and you didn't want her to sit nowhere.
Yeah, they said she wore a rag around her head.
She just wasn't clean.
Yeah.
Yes.
And she was connected with other things
yes.
that made money
yes,
as well.
Yes.
Anna Mae Blackwell said John Follis had a special friend.
It was his late mistress.
Yes,
because she moved in our area.
Yeah.
On Washington Street.
You know R.T. Brooks?
R.T.
Brooks.
Color fella?
White guy.
No, I don't know him.
He married John Follis's granddaughter.
father had the one daughter. She was killed real young in a car accident, but she had a daughter. And this girl married R.T. Brooks, who he worked at the distillery. He lives out there by Mike Field's HUD office.
Sure enough.
And he told me that Follis put his mistress up in the same house with his wife and would go from one end of the house to the other. But his wife was a real religious woman. So
she is very friendly. I was thinking about her the other day. She had a beautiful head of hair. She wore these big braids around her head. She looked like a queen all the time. She would just carry herself graceful.
And she supposedly was big in the church and was
sure
a religious
enough.
Leader and would go from house to house.
Granny Mary had a boy by him.
Oh, she did?
Yeah, she had a child, came to think, because see, Ada May's dead, but Ada May would go around Granny Mary. And she lived right on corner Washington, and then it was called Church Street. That's where Granny Mary moved.
What street's that?
That's down there. It finally, when they finally took Dudley Street away, they made it all Blank Street from my street on over to Ann Street.
Okay, so this Church Street, at the corner of Washington and Church, where she...
Corner of Washington and St. Clair. That was the area where that was at the one little street. And see, then from there, we was trying to think what the other street was named before it was named Blank.
Dudley.
No, Dudley was down this way. This is where I moved from, but I can't recall the name it was before it was all changed, because Professor Blank lived there and they named it after him. Yeah. All through that area, Blank Street. And no one seemed to remember, because all those people dead and gone.
When would that name change have taken place? Probably...
It had to be taking place in the 30s, I believe.
Okay.
In the 30s.
Well, I'll show you something here that might help. I brought this. I went to an old insurance map. They used to have insurance adjusters would come around and they'd fire code the houses. And I Xeroxed and taped together a Xerox copy of this old insurance map, and most of it's bottom. Let me get you oriented real quick here. Here's Wilkeson running all the way out.
Yeah,
I'll pull that one.
Yeah, I see Clinton Street.
There's Clinton coming in.
Right here.
Yeah.
This is Miro.
Mm-hmm. Now here's Blanton.
Now Blanton.
Dudley.
Let's see. Dudley Blanton. Now this.
There's another part.
Now wait a minute. What's this street here? Center Street.
Center.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what area this is. This is Dudley.
There's May
Underwood. This is Dudley here.
Yeah.
And this is Blaine. Now this is the area I'm talking about.
And they call
right
it
here.
Center Street here.
I can't understand why they would
call. I can't understand that
called Center Street. Called Center Street was opposite of the school.
And look behind Center, they call Gaines.
Gaines is Alley.
And then they call Long Lane.
Long Lane, that was Cross Broadway.
Yeah, see, Long Lane, I thought it was on the south side of Broadway.
No, I think it's Cross Broadway.
So I thought this might bring back some...
I'm trying to think this street here, and I don't know why they got Center over here. This is the area I'm talking about. Because see, Hill Street was right behind this street. It ended on St. Clair.
Yeah, here it is. Here's St. Clair coming in, right there.
And St. Clair, well, that's St. Clair, then this other street is over here then, because St. Clair is what the part I'm talking about that they got Blaine. That's the part I'm talking about.
Okay.
What was that street named before it was named Blaine?
They don't have anything in there.
That's what I, because see, it wasn't Blaine Street at first. And that's what we were trying to figure out. What
see,
in the
here's
world?
Here's where Ann comes in, and this is into Ann, and there's the Salvation Army on the corner.
Yeah.
I guess that's the furniture warehouse where Simon, I just got that out. I'll just leave it. There might be some places you want to point out. Let me give you a few more names here. Julia Miles.
Yes.
Willie Miles.
Yeah, I'm sure I agree with her. Yeah, I know her.
Dorothy Wright.
What was she doing in there? She lived over in South Franklin.
That was just a name somebody mentioned. Louise Evans. That was another name people
Anna Louise Evans.
Anna Louise
Evans.
Yes,
uh-huh. She's a cousin.
She's out in Chicago.
She's in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yes.
Bessie Anderson?
That's my sister.
Is that your sister?
Yeah.
No, I didn't know that. Let's see, I guess Henry Sanders. Maybe I got Bessie's name from Henry.
Uh-huh.
But Mitty's grandmother. Is that? I don't know.
Mitty's grandmother, what they got by her?
Lucy?
It was her auntie, it wasn't her grandmother. Uh-huh. See, then somebody didn't know what to do it. Mitty's mother was this lady's sister.
Ah, okay, Bessie's.
It was Miss Lucy Gaines' sister.
Ah, okay. And then Nanny Oliver.
Yes, well, she wasn't, I don't think she was a Frankfurter nowhere. She came from out in the country somewhere. But I remember a little short lady, she went to Indianapolis.
Ah, okay. Miss Matt Harden?
Yes, she just died in the last 2-3 years.
She lived down in the bottom?
She lived down that area.
About Mayo Underwood and the schools, and do you remember any of the teachers that stand out in your mind?
I think I can recall most all the teachers that went to Mayo Underwood from Clinton Street.
Do you remember Alice Simpson?
Alice Samuels.
Samuels.
Yes.
Alice Samuels.
Sure. She was later on made principal.
Yes.
Because when we went down there, Professor Blaine went there from the old school. He was the first principal there.
When did Miss Samuels become principal? Do you remember?
Yes, or James Blackman, I think, became principal before her. No, it was other principals beside us. There was a Matheson, and then it was James Blackman, and then Miss Samuels.
I guess it would have been unusual for a woman to be principal during that day.
Yeah, no, uh-uh.
No, that would have been the 50s, maybe? Was there a black school board that helped run the school?
No, it was all the city's black school system.
One of the things that I've been told, and people sort of, I guess, not bitter but angry, but the black school got their supplies and books and things as hand-me-downs from the whites.
They were never anything new.
Never had a budget to buy anything.
No, everything, anytime you wanted something. Professor Blaine said, I have to call up Superintendent Ireland. He was a superintendent that time, and see what they can do. And we got all their old books.
Yeah. And the grad club.
That was originated afterward. They started Mayo Underwood School.
Yeah. To help get money for athletic supplies and equipment.
Because my brother, he was one of the originals of the grad club.
Do you remember when that started, by chance?
Oh, gosh. I do know where they first met.
Where was that?
It was on Blank Street, and the fellow's name was Mark Warren.
Warren?
Mark Warren. They had that first meeting at his house on a Sunday.
What led to them getting it started?
Well, they were interested in the colored children. And they wanted to keep the athletics going and to help the parents, you know, that couldn't afford to help the children. And they did things to bring spark and livelihood to the school.
What kind of things would you say?
Well, they promoted programs. They would have a basketball team of the boys, and they would dress up as girls, and they would play and do things like that just to make money. And then it was a lot of dancing. We had alumni then, and the alumni did a whole lot for the school then. But it finally broke up like everything else.
On the dances, would you all hire a band to come in?
Oh, yes, we'd hire a band. The main band was Oxford, Lexington, Kentucky, called Smoke Richardson.
Tell me, a couple of people have mentioned Smoke Richardson. They speak very highly of
He could play. He had a good orchestra, and he was good.
Is that his 12, 15 piece band?
Yes.
Perform all the popular dances.
All the dances, and you just had a good time.
Was everybody in his band black?
It was all black. It was all black then.
Is he going on, or is
he had to be.
Yeah. Yeah, he must.
Yeah, I don't think I doubt any of them are living.
Well, what? How did the community react to the Brown versus Board of Education decision when they said to integrate the schools? What were the black? Do you remember?
Well,
how black
yes, because see, it was a little group of them that wanted their children to integrate. And I guess Henry Saunders told you that his daughter was one of the very first to go to the white school.
No, he did not mention that.
Well, she was the first black girl to go over there.
What kind of reception did those children
Well,
get?
I never did hear because I'm going to say they are pushy people, very pushy. So, but Dorothy Mae was accepted because she was an outstanding student. And so she made it. And then it was a group that was really fighting the board down here, the teachers, and when the integration came, they were glad.
Yeah.
But it cut off socializing.
That's one of the things people have told me. Mayo Underwood was a social center for the black
community. It was social. And children had something to do. Now they race and nothing to do, nothing to go to. They, a lot of them, if you're not popular and you have a lovely home, you're just not accepted.
Yeah. Your ostracized.
Yeah, you're ostracized. Mm-hmm.
Did the black teachers find work then in the white system?
It was just two, three of them that went from Mayo Underwood over there. Just two, three.
Did the others want to and just couldn't, or they just?
I don't know whether they just retired or just didn't want to be bothered. I didn't know.
It would have been a hard jump from teaching all blacks.
All blacks to go.
And then have to deal with the white children and
right,
prejudice. Let me talk about some of the businesses. And if you can help me by identifying where they're located. I know a lot of the names, but I don't. Tiger's Inn.
That was on the corner of Clinton and Mural. I mean, the Washington Street and Mural.
Okay, here's Washington and here's Mural. Okay, there's the...
It was on the corner of Washington and Mural. Right here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have any remembrances of the Tiger Inn?
Yes, before it was the Tiger's Inn, it was an upholstery shop there.
Upholstery shop?
Yes, a little man upholstered there.
Black man?
Oh, yes. See, all this in the black area. And then Tubba Marshall, Ellsworth Marshall's father, and Urin Atkins, they went together and formulated, and Professor Condy, he's dead also. Those three went together and had Tiger's Inn. And the reason why, because our team was called the Tigers, Clinton Street Tigers. That's where the Tiger's Inn came from.
Ah, see, I never knew how
yes,
it got named the
Tigers.
Yeah,
that was it, Tiger's Inn, because we were called Clinton Street Tigers. And then when we got on down, I don't know, I can't recall whether we still called ourselves the Tigers or not, but that's where the name Tiger's Inn came from.
Okay. Rob's Funeral Home.
Yes, I worked with them.
I think that's right. Here's St. Clair, and there's Clinton coming in, and it says Undertaker here.
Well, that's where he was, right there.
Do you
there.
Have any remembrances of Rob's funeral home?
Well, yes, I worked there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, as a beautician. I did a lot of the work after later on.
Oh.
Well, see, that was a family business.
Yes.
Two brothers, Anderson William and Tom Rob, whatever his name was, Tom Rob.
When Jack was their son.
Jack was a son.
Was he the only child?
No, two girls. Two
are
girls.
Is any of those scattered?
They married.
Okay.
One, I think, went to Argentina. They both married whites. But they were so fair themselves, they just went on. Because there has been discussed, neither one of them never to come back for the mother or the father case.
Oh, you mean they didn't come back for the
funeral?
No. They say Jack was a very popular man.
Oh, he was. He was talented.
Let me check one. Say it before. Oh, it's still going. Yeah, he was an entertainer.
Yes, very, very good. He was accepted so many places.
White and black.
Yes, talking about. He made his money mostly from the white places.
Some of the groceries. Where was Frog Woods' grocery?
Frog Woods started on Mural and Washington.
Okay, here's Mural in Washington again.
Yes, he's...
There's Tigers.
Well, then he must be over here on this corner.
Okay.
Because Tigers Inn on one side of the street, and the grocery was across the street.
On the corner.
Well, now he must... Tiger Zen must be in here, and Frog was over here.
Okay. Alonzo Lewis.
He was on the corner of Dudley and Wilkerson.
Okay, here's Dudley and Wilkerson. There's that corner.
Yeah, he was on the corner there.
Was he on the same block with Mayo Underwood?
Yes, he was on the same block.
Okay, so he'd be right in that, that corner right there. All right. Triplets. Triplets Grocery.
Triplets was on Muro Street near St. Clair.
Okay, here's Muro and St. Clair.
He was on the opposite side.
On,
going across.
Okay, on the St. Clair side?
Yes.
Okay. Bryant's Grocery. Bob Dreyer had it and became Bryant's.
Well, Bob Dreyer's grocery was on St. Clair.
Was on St. Clair?
Yes, he first had his grocery store on St. Clair.
Where?
On the corner of St. Clair and, as we call it, Blanton Street.
Ah, okay. So he's up here then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then Cozy Corner.
Cozy Corner, that's up in the bottom somewhere.
Yeah. I think got it Washington and Clinton Street.
Yes.
I believe Ellsworth Marshall Jr.
Ran it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you have any remembrances of Cozy Corner? Nobody's ever described it to me. What?
Well, it was just a place where the young people and the older people sat and wanted to drink, eat a good sandwich or drink a cold beer. They just got there. It was just a place where you met friends. Clean place.
Jukebox or dance floor?
No dance, but they had jukeboxes. Box. Everybody had a jukebox. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Hayden's Beer Garden.
Oh, that was on Clinton Street.
That was sort of a rough place.
It was. I don't know about that, but I just knew where it was up in there.
Yeah, well, James T. Graham said his dad, Black Cat, worked for Hayden.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact,
he was a policeman.
Hayden was a policeman?
Yeah.
No wonder he could do what he wanted to do down there.
That's why a lot of the people there, they knew all Cass and all of them, Cousin Cass, he was cousin. They knew because they had protection. And even when D.D. Smith was the mayor of Frankfort, I'm not telling these names, but I had friends that bootlegged, but they always knew when the revenues was coming in because D.D. had a daughter named Myra that would go these places, and she would let, and they would know. They would let Cass know, and Cass would say, get rid of your stuff, the revenues are coming in.
So Cass was connected with the white
people. There he was power for the blacks, and then the white people knew him.
Yeah. So he's sort of a go-between almost between the two worlds.
Yes.
The Suds Eteria.
Well, that was Suds Eteria was on Clinton Street.
So a laundromat. Was that owned by black?
No, I think it was owned by white with a black
ran it.
Yes.
And that's the thing a lot of these businesses, blacks didn't own, but they ran them.
Ran them because what blacks had enough money to furnish a place like that? You had to have all that equipment. No black couldn't put no washers and dryers in. They didn't make that kind of money then.
And they couldn't get it loaned from
they
white banks.
That's right. Because when I first built my shop, but this furniture is antique. My mother said, you better not lose my furniture. I had to put it up to get the loan.
That's collateral. Where was your shop?
My first shop was on Washington Street, but I'm just telling you what you had to do. And Mr. Sutherland, he was a president of the Farmers Bank. Fred Sutherland.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fred Sullivan. And so I had talked with him. And he sent the men, somebody down there to look it over. And I went back. He said, oh, yes, you can get, because they all wanted this. You'd be surprised. And the lady that owned it, she, her home. See, this is what hurts. The black people had beautiful stuff. And the white people would come. I've had them here. They want this table. I don't know whether you ever heard of George Hazel Riggs. Well, he was a big shot. This table was his. My auntie worked for him. And before he died, he gave my auntie all of this. And I've had people come in here who wanted it.
Offered you money to buy it from
you. You know what that table, what do you think that table's worth now?
$1,500?
More than that. And they have, and they have come in here worried me. I said, why do you all come in black people's home? Don't you think we like nice things too? But see, this is what has happened. A lot of black people, white people, because where my sister worked, the, can't call them by name right now, they had nothing but antique. And she had beautiful stuff. I had two aunties, their home was nothing but antique. Well, white people came and saw it. My auntie, one woman did, she loved money. She sold lots of beautiful things to them. Mrs. South, I don't know if you heard of the South, but he was a big diplomat, and my auntie worked for them. In fact, when she died, my auntie was living with her. And when she died, she left her everything.
What was your aunt's name?
Eliza Grant.
Eliza Grant.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing I've heard from a number of people is when they had to relocate out of the bottom, the homeowners didn't get enough money to buy
a home as big,
and they had to sell or give away a lot of their precious antiques and belongings.
They had to. They did it.
A lot of them bitter about that.
Well, one lady, she's both of them now, the sisters, she claimed that it was caused a relocation, that she became ill. It wasn't that. But this is what I said, because my mother and I scuffled to own this shack. But we didn't have a home. We weren't able to get a home because we didn't make enough money.
Did you eventually own a home in the bottom? Is that
no, this is the first place we owned. We rented.
Is this thing on? Yeah, it's on. Okay. There's a couple other businesses that I wanted to check and make sure that I had the right one. The 99 Club. You remember the 99 Club?
Where are they supposed to be?
George Taylor had Miss Knott running it for him. It was a second floor place above George Taylor's whiskey store.
99 Club on Washington Street.
Yes.
On Washington Street, yes. I knew
was
that.
It in that block between Broadway and...
Between the block on the... Going up toward Broadway on the right-hand side of the street.
Okay. Yes. Would it have been across from the...
Not across from the... Oddfellas building, but right in that area.
Yeah, here's the Oddfellas building,
yeah.
Right here.
Well,
on the
then it was over across the street.
Like catty corner,
yes.
From
mm-hmm.
or something.
Mm-hmm.
That was a place people speak pretty. They go there and they dance and maybe have a sandwich.
Yeah,
or
they
a
had good cooks. They
yeah.
had good cooks. Watts and his old lady, they were darn good cooks. And it was just a clean, nice place. Good food.
I talked to Maggie Knott.
Yeah.
Yesterday, and she said we never had violence in there. She said if somebody cut up,
they put them out.
They'd never be allowed back.
They never be allowed. They never were. Most people, I tell you what irked us. It wasn't the people in that area that cut up. It was the people off East Main and South Franklin that bring their dirt, and they'd be the ones that would do the cutting up.
And then they go home and you're all stuck with the reputation.
The reputation. And we had to let them know we found there was a lot of arguments about that. People over there were just decent people.
Yeah.
Everybody was just clean, fun-loving people.
What about Shine Boys? Remember Shine Boys?
Do I? Lord, he could cook. He was out of the mountains. Yes, he could cook. He had his business on Gas House Alley and Muro Street.
Okay, here's Miro, Gas House Alley.
Yeah.
Where would that have been?
That was lead up into that street. You go up to Broadway where Long Lane.
Okay, here's Broadway, and here's Gaines. There's Long Lane.
Well, it's on corner of Gas House Alley.
Because
See why they call it Gas House? The building on Miro and Washington was a gas company.
Ah, well, here's
that. That's that big place there.
Yeah.
It was Gas Place. That's where they brought all the trucks.
Where was Shine Boys then?
Shine Bar was on the corner of Gas House and Miro.
Okay, here's Miro, and there's Gas House.
Yes.
So he was right over
right
here.
Right behind it.
They said he could cook chitlins.
He
like
could.
People
you
would come
eat
in.
Them?
I've never had them myself.
They're delicious. You know what they are, don't you?
I thought that they were
the guts.
Guts.
The guts.
And one of the stories, I think it was Mr. Sanders told me, is KSU, when they'd have the big homecoming, people would bring folk to eat at Shine Boy's, because he could cook like you wouldn't believe.
He could cook.
Yeah, but he was one that Urban Renewal sort of did his business in.
Well, no, Shine Boy had left before then.
When did he leave?
Now? Oh, Shine Boy left way before the Urban Renewal came down there. He became ill health, and he went back home.
Back to the mountains?
Back to the mountains.
Do you know what his name was? Nobody
knew. No, I don't know whether anybody, she's dead. And one of the ladies, that worked there, I'm just wondering if she's here, because I saw her other day, Ella Cleveland, at her mother's house. She worked for Shine Boy, and whether she ever really knew his name or not, I wouldn't know.
See, that's another one that you just... Do you have any stories about Shine Boy, any favorite remembrances of him?
Shine Boy had a temper. But I tell you what, he didn't lie on no foolishness. You respected his place or else you'd get out. And as the school was crossed, he was nice to everybody. And if he liked you, he was more than nice, because he was in our home quite a bit. Because he had never eaten in the South, Augate South.
Yeah.
And Mama offered him some, and he says, tell me how you make this. And Mama told him how I made it, and then he started making it and selling it.
Well, he's one that people speak very highly of.
Yeah.
Do you remember a place called the Silver Slipper?
That's up in the bottom too, I think.
Yeah, it was down in the bottom.
Yeah.
The Barbers, Charles William Childs.
Yeah.
Said he was full of mischief. Corn Pudding Childs.
Yeah.
Fred Allen.
Oh yes, Baba.
John Davis.
Well, you take first before that, Charles Green worked with when the first barbers down in there beside Fred Allen, aside from Fred, was a man named Russell.
Russell.
Okay, I don't know what Mr. Russell's first name was, because I made a dime every Sunday to go to his house and get his dinner and take it to him.
When would this have been?
Oh, I was a child. That would have to have been in the early 20s.
Early 20s.
Yes.
Where would the bar, were the barber shops scattered throughout the area? Were
they was all in the area. They was on Clinton Street or on Washington Street. That's where the barber shops were. They was in the really area together where the restaurants were.
Little Restaurant, a place run by Newt Berry.
That was on Washington Street. Yes, a little place over there by the pool room.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Would that have been the pool room owned by George Taylor?
Yes, yes.
Ike's.
Ike Yod. Ike Yod?
What?
Ike Yod?
Ike.
That's Ike Yod. I don't know what they got by him.
Nothing. They just...
No.
A place called The Grill that Will Wren used to...
Yeah, well, that was Ike Yod's place. That was where Annie Mary Wren's father owned.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's just another little eating
place.
The White Spot on Clinton Street.
Well, see, some of those places I don't...
You never had any connection with. Fensel's Meat Market.
That was it. That was Sinclair.
Sinclair. Okay.
Sinclair.
And that, if you didn't have refrigeration, I guess you... Did they have a big freezer?
They had those great big ice boxes, because everybody bought ice.
Yeah.
And but he had some of the best meats, and they were the nicest people.
They would work with the blacks.
They worked with the blacks, and they, if you would, they knew you, they would give you a little extra. And when things were, can't think of the word now, you had to go there and stand in line. I've been up there many a morning, 6 o'clock. To get meat, and meat with a shortage of food. That was during that World War.
Oh,
War.
Like when they were rationing.
Rationing food, yeah. I would say, for rationing food.
Well, Fensel had more than one location, didn't he? He moved around.
He first was, my knowledge, was on Sinclair. Then I I think he only went to Wilkinson Street or where he went to.
I think he did go over to Wilkinson and Broadway.
Broadway up in there, yes.
Where they ran in. Has any of those pencils left around here that we
if
know?
If they are, she would be on, it's a house actually on the intersection going up the bypass from off of Home Street. It's on the Orange and Road. It's the pencils still live out there.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to see if I can talk to them sometime. A place called the Red Brick. It used to be where Cozy Corner, I guess.
Yeah, Red Brick, all that's down where Real Ren and all them ran.
Do you have any remembrances of George Taylor or ever met him? Or?
No, I never knew George Taylor. I just saw George Taylor. That's the one that owned the liquor store on Broadway.
And the pool room.
Pool room. I just knew of George Taylor, but he was nice to colored women and people down there. Because I had a girlfriend that worked for him. And she still goes to the house and cleans up for them.
Is George's son, didn't he have a son?
Yeah, his son has a liquor store.
Yeah, his son's still George. With us, and he hasn't gone on.
Yeah, the liquor store is still out there on East Main up the road.
I thought about calling him, seeing if his son would talk to me. I haven't done it yet.
Well, he might.
Charlie Duvall, did you ever?
I knew of him. He had the warehouse.
Yeah, yes. He distributed beer.
Beer and stuff, uh-huh.
Earl Tracy.
Yes,
Do you remember Earl?
Oh, sure.
Anything about him stick out?
Well, now, mind? James Beard, Papa Jazz, he could have told you because his wife was his niece.
Ah, okay. Uh-huh. Well, Earl, of course, Henry Sanders worked.
That was his uncle.
Yeah, he worked for him.
Yeah.
As a black businessman, owner of a cab company, people have told me that Mr. Tracy was somewhat influential in the community.
I don't call him influential. He might have been to some people, but some of us he wasn't. Because Earl didn't have the background, the stamina to really. Some people, I wonder why they would try to pursue an office when they're not capable.
Yeah. Well, he didn't have much formal education.
That's what I know.
He didn't. That's all. Dr. Barry, do you remember Dr. Barry?
Oh, yes, very well.
Good physician.
Yes, very well.
Good physician. The Winnie A. Scott Hospital.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Second Street.
Second Street.
Yeah, down at the East End of Second Street.
Yes.
And Dr. Barry would practice there, and I guess he'd come out to your home too.
Yes, he because he removed my tonsils in my house.
Oh, really?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What became of Dr. Barry?
He passed. He was an alcoholic.
Yeah, I'd heard that.
Yeah, an alcoholic badly.
And actually, I heard that he passed in sort of violent circumstances.
Yes, he was. He had a temper. Yes.
Dr. Biggerstaff.
Yes, he was a dentist.
Where was his office? Do you remember?
Dr. Biggerstaff was on Plymouth Street there, where later on Elizabeth Oldsby had a beauty shop there.
And I've called Miss Oldsby to see if she talked to me. She's thinking about it. She said,
well, she's getting ready to go away. I may they be leaving tomorrow. Her granddaughter's getting married.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, she told me that.
And then they're getting ready to leave the city.
Oh, they're going to relocate.
Yes. Neither one of them are aware of them. They're going to her daughter's daughter home in Florida to live.
I missed out on her. Probably Dr. Withers. He's a dentist.
Yes, he was our. Yes, he married a school teacher.
Uh-huh. Do you know when Biggerstaff was practicing his?
Yes, I'm getting Dr. Gain, Dr. Biggerstaff mixed up. Dr. Biggerstaff lived in Lexington, and that's where he lived. Because I used to go there because Dr. Barr had somebody fix my teeth and didn't do right, and I would go to Dr. Biggerstaff in Lexington to do the work.
So he didn't come over to Frank?
No, but after he left, he went to Lexington to live.
Oh,
yes.
I see what you're saying. Dr. Underwood.
Well, he was director on Mural Street. Yes, I was in there on the office.
Was he your family physician?
No, Dr. Anderson was my family doctor.
Anderson?
Uh-huh.
See, that's the name I had, Dr. Anderson.
Yes, well, I don't see why. His son was a big lawyer in Louisville, Charles Anderson.
Ah, okay. Yeah. I guess the black physicians and dentists and doctors maintained their own offices and pretty much treated you either in their office or their home.
They had offices. Most of them had offices because they were making the money, and such as it was, they were good livers.
I guess they would have been the middle class. Those that lived down the bottom would have been the middle class.
Yes.
We talked a little bit about some other people. I just mentioned, do you have any remembrances of Will Castleman? I mean, can you describe him? I don't even know what he looked like.
He was a tall, handsome fella that had a sort of a limp, but he was very classy and very choicy. And he was my cousin, but he was a nice fella, and if he liked you, he would go to bat for you. But if he didn't, and you'd, I could understand, because a lot of people just wanted to connect out for him. But he would do it if you would behave yourself. So, he was nice.
Yeah, they said that he was had a deep voice.
Deep voice, what are you talking about?
But if you got in a scrape, he was a man that could square it for you.
Because he knew the people, the right people uptown. But if you didn't have no background, or if you were one of them types, didn't care about yourself, you don't fool with him.
You wouldn't mess with him.
No, I don't blame you.
John Buckner.
Oh, yes, he was in my church.
He was a self-made man, wasn't he?
Self-made man, uneducated, but worked for the Berries, he and his wife, for years. And that's where
the
he made...
Distillery people? Though.
No, the Berries, they live out on where they're now at your little bike. Very rich people. And that's where he and his wife worked for years, and their mother and father worked for these people.
Uh-huh.
And so it's where Juniper Hill and all that, the Berries owned all
that.
Yeah,
yeah.
And so, but John Buckner was, he was a carpenter, and he bought... Well, you could buy a house then for $200-$300.
Yeah. And he'd buy them and
fix them up. He kept them up. That's one thing about him. He kept up his property.
Well, that's, I've heard many people, and Miss Henrietta Gill said to me, she had no qualms about living in a house of John.
No, he kept them up.
Because he did work. Yeah. And he was a vocal opponent of the urban renewal.
I knew it.
He fought it.
I knew it.
And,
but the blacks didn't vote for him. We've had a lot of them run for council. None of them has ever succeeded because the blacks have worked against one another. And they just would not put in Buddy Ellis and Tubman Marshall, Simmons, and all of them have run, but they never won because a lot of them wouldn't vote for them.
Well, that's one thing I heard, that urban renewal split the black leadership.
It did. It did something we never understand. I don't know why. But that's the only thing I never could understand with all the togetherness. They just didn't stick together on politics.
Well, and I guess some of them lined up on one side saying, this is good, and we should do it, and others opposed
it. Well, I think a lot of time, jealousy has a big part. If, I'm not going to vote, because I've seen that in the church. I'm not going to vote for him while he thinks he's cute and important. Well, no, you think I'm going to put him in anyway? He don't even speak to you. That's what happens.
So it just, I guess, factionalism and infighting kept these people. Antonio Papa.
Well, he was an ice cream man.
Yeah.
Bushcard. Bushcard. Then he had his little truck, the bell. There was quite a few of them around here.
But I guess if you made a nickel or whatever, you could go get an ice cream.
Oh, yeah, nickel ice cream. And like you say, they lived on the corner of Miro and St. Clair. And he had his place in the backyard where he made it. Many a day we go there, and he knew you well, or you would, he just pile it up. Oh, Tony, three for some more. Now, I can't give you all my ice cream, but just nice. He has a daughter that lives down the street.
She's, what is her name? Do you know a man?
Let me think, I know her name.
Williams. I'd like to talk to her.
Yes, down here on Muro Street. You know where Simon's?
Sure.
Live right next door to Simon's.
The next house up?
Yes.
Okay.
Because
people think very, at least most I've talked to, thought very highly of
Tony Papa. They were the nicest people going.
Tony Thomas Black Cat Graham.
Oh, yes, he was a friend. Yeah.
A friend of yours?
Oh, yes.
They said he was a baseball pitcher.
Baseball? Sure. They used to play baseball over in the prison. He and King Lindsay and a bunch of them. And somebody was always, because actually I was a child that was like to go and do things. We would go up on the Fort Hill, and you could look down in the prison ground and see them play ball. And then the prison then would have shows. They would take me there to see the prisoners dance and clap. It was fun.
You could actually go in and see a production put on by the prisoners.
Yes, 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 indeed.
Well, let me ask you, some people have said that a number of residents that lived in the bottom were actually relatives and family of folk who were incarcerated in the prison.
They were.
Would you say that's accurate?
A lot of them were. Yes. Uh-huh.
And folk would get out of jail or prison
come back home
and go down to the bottom.
Because you knew why they went there and you didn't hold it against them. But these people that comes into Franklin, that parolee, that stay here, they can tell you one thing, but you don't know the background.
Well, Black Cat was briefly incarcerated, but he took a fall for Hayden.
That's what I heard. Yes.
James said that.
Yes.
So, I mean, I guess he was pitching ball maybe when he was in prison, but James said his dad would go out with a team called the Frankfort Merchants, and they would go to Springfield and Lebanon and Versailles.
They would play all around. They play all around.
Did you ever go to any of the games?
Yes, but wasn't this team. I went later on with a smaller team. But I love baseball. I'm a sport addict, and I can sit all day and watch sports.
Yeah.
But yes, I have remember seeing them play.
As they said, it was quite a social occasion. You pay a little bit to get in, and they said the whites would come.
Oh,
and
yes.
How did a fella get on the team? I mean, did you try out or?
Well, yes, I imagine they didn't have tried because you had to know what position you were going to play, and you had to be good at it. And if you made too many errors, they didn't keep you. I don't blame them.
Mm-hmm. And James said that if you won the game, a lot of times the winning team got to split the gate.
They did.
And take the money home.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was people sold bootleg whiskey at the place, and you'd meet there, and it was a big social deal. Big time.
That's where Franklin people lived. Well, that's old town because I've never been to Bardstown, but I remember they say some of the best liquor came out of Bardstown, bootleg liquor.
Yeah.
And Franklin people had it. I've been around it.
Well, and you had to make your money some way.
You had to if you wanted to live, because people had families. And then, men, if they made $7 a week and you try to have a family, even though living was cheap, you want to look right, you want to dress your children right, you want to have a good table like everybody else, put a whole chicken on the table, anything, you had to do something extra. Bootlegging, and then, I know what I'm talking about, some of the bootleggers there had lovely homes, their customer was the rich white people.
Well, and then somebody told me that a lot of times the liquor come in, a white person bring it in.
They
more or less hire a black person to sell it down there for you.
That's where they did.
And then I don't know if they just give you a set amount of money or you got a part of the sales or how that would work.
I don't know either, but I do recall this. You see, the black people, mostly it was homebrew.
Ah, okay.
And that's what the white people like. See, that's a beer, you know.
Yeah.
And I know what I'm talking about because I had friends that did that, and I had a girlfriend, and I would help her. Yes.
Well,
because we were protected. We knew that the man uptown was behind us.
And as long as, I guess, there wasn't trouble or anything.
Oh, no. The clientele was people that it was class. I mean, either rich white people. They came.
Would they come down into the area, and there'd be a prearranged place that you'd meet to sell?
No, they would just come. They knew they would come mostly on Saturdays and Sundays. That was your biggest sale, Saturdays and Sundays. They would come in their fine cars and park, just like you park out my door, and come on wherever they want to go. And just one or two places that cater to the rich.
They'd come in and pick up whatever they wanted or whatever you
know. No, they would sit there and enjoy themselves.
Oh, they'd actually drink there?
Oh, yeah, I'm not talking about.
Oh, I thought they were picking up the stuff and taking it back to uptown or whatever.
They would sit there and indulge and And then if you had anything to eat, they would say, "Can I? Have you got anything?" We'd sell them to them.
Yeah. And actually eat some?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then with the approval of the white officials, or it wouldn't have been
Well,
going
they
on?
Didn't know about it. Of course, the man uptown, he knew, but all of this was, he was screened.
Protected.
Mm-hmm.
Alec Gordon, do you remember Alec?
Sure, I remember Alec Gordon. He had a place on Washington Street and on Broadway.
I've heard good and bad. I heard he started out in groceries.
Then he bootlegged.
That you had to be careful not to get cross with him, because he would kill you.
He had a temper.
And one of the stories, I have yet to see if it's accurate or not, is that he went into a place to get some alcohol, and it was a black man looking after the place, and refused him for some reason. And Alec came back and shot him and killed him. And
who
after
was
that,
the name? Because his name, I might remember.
I can't think of the name of. I've got it on the. I've got so many hours to take. Yeah. I'd have to go back and try.
Yeah.
But I heard the story that he and Shine Boy got into it one time.
I think I heard something like that, because.
Just right out in the street.
Right out in the street.
Away at each other.
And they were shooting at one another.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'd heard that, and neither one of them hurt each other.
No, I think they said they were shooting in the air, and either one wasn't trying to hit the other, but won't let them know, I don't take nothing from you, you don't take nothing from me.
Me, exactly. Did you have to be tough to get by down there? I mean, did you have to?
No, I don't call it tough. You just had to know your way around. Because, like you say, everybody was together. It wasn't mostly the people in the area, it was the outside people who came in here and caused trouble.
Tubba Marshall. Do you remember much about Tubba?
Yes, I said he and Atkins and Urine and, I mean, Murray Condi started the Tigers Inn.
Well, they said Tubba was an athlete himself.
He was a football player.
And he was an official, too. He could officiate games.
Yes, he could. He was very talented.
And he was called upon to do so by the whites and blacks.
He was talented.
Squeezer Brown, we already talked about, Jack Rutt, Earl Tracy, L. Boone Hampton, Artist Guire, Ward Oates.
I've heard those names, they uptown.
Glenn Purdy.
I've heard of all of those.
Henry Mack.
H. Mack?
Yeah, H. Mack.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know much about, can you describe him? I don't have...
Well, I... Who gave his name?
Might have been Henry
H. I thought of perhaps. I don't see much Henry H. Mack did, because he came here to attend Kentucky State, which he finished.
Ah, okay, so he came later on.
Yeah, he came later on. Then he married a girl, and they lived up there on Clinton Street. But I don't see where he offered too much.
Yeah, I haven't really called him yet to see if he'd be willing to talk. He apparently managed a place or a pool.
I think he did something like that.
Yeah. The Reverend W.R. Hutchison.
Oh, that was my pastor.
Now, he was a vocal opponent of the urban renewal. He spoke out against it.
Yes.
And forcefully, very much so. And I heard that he was, unfortunately, was killed in a fire.
Yes.
Thomas Jefferson, Jeff.
Yeah, Jeff. Uh-huh. He was married to one of my best friends. Yeah, now he was a crusader.
Was Thomas Jefferson a
crusader? Yeah, he was good. He would go to bat for you. He almost had power like Castleman, because he knew the right people uptown too. Mm-hmm. And he stood up for you. Because I remember one night it was going to be one of the white girls that was married to Bixby Fowler. In fact, it was his wife. And she had been a prostitute. And she, I don't know what made her do it. She went up the street and was flaunting herself. And she, nobody just looked at, because they knew who she was. And she went back and told Bixby that someone insulted her. And it caused almost a racial rout. And I don't know how some fellas from Shelbyville, Lawrenceburg came to take up. But Jefferson and all the men around there went home and got their guns. Jeff went to Bixby and told him, said, "Bixby, no one insulted your wife." And he let him know, because everybody knew where she was. They sat there with the guns, and when these fellas from other town found out, they said, "It's not our war, we're going home."
So Bixby called in a bunch of outsiders to come.
We was wondering how they found out that this was trouble down there in the bottom. That was one of the biggest troubles we ever had. But not a shot was fired.
Well, see, I had heard that there wasn't no shots, but there was a fist fight.
Could
and Thomas Jefferson smacked, could have been Bixie over the head with a shovel, sent him to the hospital.
Well, Bixie, he was angry, but we couldn't understand it because Bixie knew what he had married.
Yeah.
And she just wanted, because Bixie was in his place. She had this long flowing hair, I can see her in there because she was very attractive. And she made the remark, "None of you niggas want my meat tonight?"
She was just asking for
it. She was asking for it. And then when they didn't say anything, they just looked at it, then she got angry, went back home and told them they insulted her.
And nobody made up with it.
Made up. Yeah. And that's what started it all.
See, I know Bixie's second, Vivian Follis.
Mm-hmm.
Fine Christian woman. You know,
sure
she, I don't know if you ever met
her. Is Bixie still living?
Bixie dead. Oh,
I thought so, because he moved me out here. I could have killed him. My mother always made homemade wine, and when I went to look at my wine, he and the fella that was helping them gone and been drinking out of it with the mouth, didn't even get a cup.
Oh, man.
And I says, I didn't drink, I put it all out.
Yeah. Bixie was another one that he said he's good with his fists and he had a quick temper.
He had a temper. I knew him. I played with Bixie.
Oh.
Yes, I'm talking about it. We all was Randy, all the colored children, all of us.
Bixie's second wife, Vivian, was a minister in a sort of a holiness kind of church
sure
for
enough.
Whites. And she said one time she accidentally stepped on Bixie's toe.
Yeah.
And he turned around and decked her, knocked her flatter than a
pancake. Well, he had a temper.
Yeah. And then he made up with her and kissed and hugged. And I mean, you could just turn right around and.
Well, he wasn't as outgoing as his brother Carlos. You know, he left to be a coming movie star.
Oh, I didn't know.
And he went out west and then he was talented. I think he wanted to be a lawyer or something. And then there was Lassie. I think Lassie's been dead.
Yeah, well, Carlos came back, didn't he? And was state representative or something?
Came back, he had something.
Yeah, he was
yeah,
big political.
Yeah.
I'm going to switch out here because I've done run you into the ground. I don't mean to, but I'm just going to ask a few questions about urban renewal real quick. Do you remember how you found out about the Urban Renewal Project, where you heard about it or read about it? Or?
Well, I heard about it before it actually came into effect.
Ah.
I was talking with this fella, and this fella said to me then, he said, I was living on Blind Street. He says, Mary, your mother's working for some good people. Why don't you all try to find a place? I said, what are you talking about, find a place? We're all right here. He says, I'm not supposed to tell it, but they're going to clean out the bottom. And I didn't want to believe it. And then when it did materialize, it was just a catastrophe because people just didn't know what they was going to do. And we were one of the last movers to move away from down there in the area because they were tearing down and everything.
When did you leave? When did y'all leave? Do you remember?
Well, when we left, there was a lot of people still down there, but they was really after, and we were so in hopes where the state office building is now, the one down there on Wilson Street, it was like a fountain or something, a well underneath. We kept all those hoping that they would sink.
The state office building would sink down?
Yeah, sink on down there, where down there on corner of Wilson Street. We used to let the building sink because they took it away from us. But see, all along, they say, well, my gosh, here we thought we were living in beautiful air. These people are living in the pretty part of Frankfurt. And that's why they put up flood walls so the water wouldn't get us anymore, because they had buildings down there to protect.
Yes, and you all had been needing flood protection
for
forever.
It was sad the way we had to
but
go through
the
that.
The thing that amazed me, flood after flood, people would come back.
Come back, it was home. Where were they going? They didn't make enough to go establish themselves in other places, because the further you got, or the better location, you had to pay more rent.
But somebody told me, said, well, the flood to us was almost a time to get everybody together,
didn't
a
it?
Big celebration sometimes.
You had a good time. Wherever you go, everybody had the little money, and you just ate and drank and played cards, and you danced, and you told yarns. Yes.
Just sort of socialize,
it
and then
was.
When the water went down, everybody go and help each other.
Help each other clean up and move back in there and everything. You would never know it's been a flood.
when after you got tipped off about urban renewal, what was your reaction when the plans were formally announced?
Well, everybody was so in hopes they would never materialize. But then when they started buying up, they started buying John Buckner's property and then everything. Then if your home was owned by a white person, they would let you know you wouldn't have to find a place.
Well, did you all fight it, try to fight back?
Yeah, a lot of them went there, didn't want to sell the home, but you don't fight the law. The law is it.
Well, there were some public hearings, one at Mayo Underwood, I think.
Yes,
maybe.
Did you go
to any of them?
No, because I said it to people that own property.
And
I said, we didn't own no property, there was no news of us going. Because we had been told that we were going to have to leave.
Yeah. When, some of the things the property owners did, they hired some lawyers.
They did, a lot of them.
But nothing ever came of that. Do you know what? Why?
We often wonder if the lawyers were in cahoots with the people of town.
Because I've read the names J.S. Carroll and a man by the name of Julian Nippenberg, and I've read quotes in the paper. They came in, they went to the fiscal court, they went to the city council, they made all these statements like, this is wrong and we're gonna fight it.
Nothing ever happened.
We never understood
that, because we all say the same thing. They are being paid, and they was being double paid. They was gypping the people, that's what we call it.
See, somebody told me that a lot of property owners would put up as much as $200 or $500.
I know it, and they lost it.
They lost it
because these lawyers weren't doing the right thing. They was taking money from us, and we believe people of town was telling them, don't do it.
Somebody might have been slipping them some money
on the other side, you never know.
When you all got the notification you had to leave, did you have any dealings at all with the urban renewal officials like Maurice Scott?
Oldest thing we knew that they would tell you that you would get $500 after your relocation, that you would get that, and then they would have somebody to move you.
Okay.
And so most of us got $500.
And you left in about 60...
Oh, I can't recall when we moved, because that was made me have to buy.
Contact with Frank Lewis or Charles R. Perry. They were whites that was running that. They didn't come out to you and talk about your options?
They might have with the group, but not, because I didn't have no parts with that.
Well, since you didn't own any property, I guess you didn't have to worry about getting a price.
No. Well, we did have to worry because at that particular time we knew Blanton Street from Sinclair. They weren't coming in there, but they made promises, and that's what we were looking forward to, those promises, that the government was going to build homes, and you had 40 years to pay for that home in that area. That's what hurt me, because a lot of us were relying on that, and it never did materialize. Come back in there and live, because that was home to all of us. We didn't want to go somewhere else and live, and that's what I had told my mother. We said, well, we'll save our money, and when they do, we'll come and buy one of these homes. But it never did happen. And that's the only thing we never could understand, what happened to those homes.
Well, in 65, the Breathitt administration was looking for a place for a new office tower. And they started working with the city fathers of Frankfort and the slum clearance people. And then the feds, you know, when they used to have the old post office at Paul Sawyer Library, they were looking for a place to build a building. And the Corps of Engineers refused to build a flood wall until they were guaranteed that there would be redevelopment money. Mm-hmm. And see, they got all together, and they threw out the plans for the housing and all that.
So that's what happened to the houses.
They threw them out after the Breath administration.
Well, we was wondering, this is the first I heard, I was wondering what happened.
Well, the white officials would say we couldn't get interest from developers to come and build private housing in an area that flooded.
Uh-huh.
And so we never could get any interest. And my feeling is they never really pushed it that hard. And then when this opportunity came along with the state to build that tower, they jumped them. And then the Corps of Engineers said, okay, you got the tower nailed down, we'll build you the wall. Uh-huh. And then came the feds, we'll put our building. Then came the Y, and they put our building. And then Farnham Dudgeon Civic Center, that came in as, that was sort of a bone for KSU.
We'll get you an arena here,
and that hopefully line up support from KSU. What objections did you and your neighbors have to the project?
Well, like you say, we knew that a lot of the house was rat infested, but it was home. We just didn't want it. Because, like you say, a lot of people still was making meager wages, and they just didn't want to move because they figured they could not maintain the upkeep of the homes.
Well, when you all had to leave the area, were you evicted or forced out, or you left on your own?
No, majority of them, they went and they had a good job. A lot of them then had state jobs. They went on and bought, built homes. That's why a lot of them's out on Langford and all
Missouri,
out in that, Missouri and all out in that area. And they laugh about it now and say, we need that push. Because we're living better than we ever have been. They didn't think they could afford it.
A lot of them say the same about World War II, that it helped. They got opportunities out of World War II.
See, that's where the World War II made a lot of these blacks much more independent.
Some of them went north, got better jobs.
Better jobs.
Money. Let me quickly. Do you know why the project came about? Why did they decide to clear out the bottom?
That's the $64 question. Well, they said, when all the floods would come, it would be amusing to see the whites standing on Broadway, intersection of Broadway and Washington Street, looking at the people scampering in boats and trucks getting their belongings out. And this is what they used to say, I've heard some of them say, look at the crawl rats. But yet when everything was cleared up and when they was making their survey, they realized that this was a prettier area than where a lot of them were living. And they says, well, my God, those niggers down there are living in a better area, in a pretty area where we ought to have it. And that's what they did.
When they came by and did that survey, did you talk to the surveyors?
No, because I was out in service then. I was babysitting. But I know a lot of people, they fought hard. They really lost a lot of them. And I heard had a lot of friends that they put up the money. But you can't beat the system.
Yeah.
It was already ordained that it's going to be there.
Well, that's what a lot of people said. It was a done deal, and it didn't matter what we said or did, and nobody was going to. See, there were statements made by white officials that if the people don't want this, then it shouldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
They were just being
hypocrites.
Well,
see, then when this happened, then I recall the words this friend had told me several years. See, he worked where these people was on the board, some of the people was on the board, and he overheard, in fact, his boss man told this person what was going to happen. And he said, if you got a friend, you get that friend out of there now, help us. And so I just didn't see it. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of people were shocked. Just couldn't accept. Well, they weren't consulted.
They weren't consulted, and it was hurting to think you had to be uprooted. You had to get rid of your home. And you know, if you're going to see a lot of those homes down there, because where we had lived on Blank Street, Dooley Mall said, ask us if he want to sell it, because he was in failing here. $800. What was $800? Nothing.
And you could buy a home for $800.
Yeah.
See, that's a lot of the elderly people had their homes paid off and owned them.
They owned them. And they were still working, doing laundry work. They was working. A lot of them was too old to work. How can we afford to move? And what is $800? Or what is this $500? What are the other homes going to be? What are they going to cost?
Yeah.
And that was the first. They just couldn't afford it. They didn't see it. Because a lot of the younger people that was working for the state, it didn't bother them. They hated it. Because they didn't want to be uprooted. A lot of them had, I tell you, down in the bottom, so I told people, you could eat off anybody's clothes. Them people down there, we were clean.
Yeah.
And they had beautiful homes, beautiful furniture and stuff. They just didn't see themselves uprooted.
And yet, people call the area a slum or a ghetto.
And they didn't know it. They didn't know it.
So you would not agree with that statement?
No. Because a slum is a person that don't have no care for themselves off the plate. They kept everything, everybody had pretty flowers, everything like that. Their homes were clean. I've seen people get out there and scrub, wash the sidewalk up, people were clean there. You didn't see a whole lot of trash and stuff out in the yard.
So they had pride in their neighborhood.
They had pride. Everybody had pride.
Well, I've done run you into the ground. I didn't mean to go so long,
well,
but
that's all right.
I really have two projects going. One is urban renewal, but other is just life down there, and I enjoy just getting a better sense of what it was like to live down there. So you all came out, you and your mama came out, and you set up your shop out here?
Out on Blanton Street. And I moved off of Washington Street because we knew Blanton Street from Sinclair over was not going to be in the urban renewal.
No.
So we moved there. The house belonged to the First Corinthian Baptist Church. We moved into there. And so, but we knew we were going to be disturbed. So a lot of people on that street, they have gone on, but see, they eventually took that street.
And you all had to move again then?
We had to move. We had to move.
Well, how did you all react when you had to move the second time?
Second time, I was running around asking people, one of the neighbors that lived there, she just died in the last few years, they lived right behind me. I asked her, was any houses out this way? Because I knew my mother was failing, and it was in walking distance from here to our church. And she could catch the bus here and go to town. And that's what I was looking for, something easy for her, not for myself, something easy for her. And so my auntie found this place, and that's how come us here.
Okay. Well, I don't understand why they kept expanding the area that they were gonna tear down the houses. It sounds like they started out with a smaller area and then they got it bigger. Somebody told me Mayo Underwood wasn't originally slated to be destroyed.
It was. They said they were going to leave it there, but if we looked up, they started breaking windows and things out there, and they know how kids will do. And first thing you knew was gone, everything. It was pathetic to see them come in. I told somebody I wouldn't go down there. I never went down there to see them knock nothing down.
You're just too painful.
It was just hurting us that I just cannot go there. And that's what I tell you several of us do. We just, in our minds, go down the street, name the people who live there, and we will say, you reckon they really turned over the grave? Such a thing as turned over the grave to realize that their homes have been demolished and we all had to leave. But it was something.
Well, and so many promises were made. That's the thing that, when you read the newspaper articles, and I've been through 20 years of newspaper articles in the State Journal, people were told at one point that if you had a good house on a good lot, there was a chance your house might stay. Well, they knocked everything down.
They took everything.
They told you that you could buy back and build back.
That's what they see. That's what a lot of them was building hopes on. And this is what I heard through the grapevine. Because John Buckner owned so much property, I think they only gave him $250,000, so that's enough for him. We often wondered if he ever got all the rest of his money. Because, see, the $250,000, that's a whole lot of money for a black person to have.
Yeah.
And he didn't need it because he was already a rich man.
Yeah.
A rich man. So whether he ever got the rest of his money, we don't know. But that's the thing that hurt, because a lot of us that was beginning to save was having hopes of going back into that area, because that was it. It was no office building, nothing going to be down here.
Well, see, the original plans called for residential housing, a park, and there's something about a shopping center.
That's what it's supposed to be. And when we looked up, here come this tall building. That's what all of us said. We hoped that the water underneath would have the building.
Take it with it. Well, a lot of the property owners, black property owners, that did hold out for a better price and went to court. One person I talked to claimed that some of their houses were burned under mysterious circumstances. Have you heard anything?
No, because, see, I tell you, when we left, we burned our bridges behind the week. I didn't go in that area at all. And I have had several ladies who say they lived there. Say, one lady said she hadn't had to go down there for something. She didn't intend to ever set her foot in that area, period.
So there was
a lot of resentment.
It's still there
because when you have promises and then when people in authority don't keep up, it does something to you.
Yeah, I've run into that on a person. Once trust is broken, it's awful hard.
It's tough.
It's tough to get pretty bad. Well, I appreciate it. If there are people that you feel that would know and be willing to talk to me and be helpful, if there was only three people that I should talk to, who would it be? Who would you recommend?
Well, let me tell you the truth. Now, most of the people that would actually really know the bottom, they gone. Now, just like I told one of the ladies, I says, now, Anna Mary Wren, she lived in that area, up there where everything was going on. She would have an insight to better than a lot of it. But one of the ladies, because I remember names and where people live and the business, she was trying to get me to talk to some more people before you came along. And I told her that I didn't care to be bothered because I just didn't want to be interviewed.
Yeah.
And so she said, well, Mary Helen, you know, you don't forget, you know people, you know where this one. I said, I don't care. You did too. You were down there. So she said, well, I don't remember people's name and places. She was asking me the other day of her family. And I told her there was no such house in that area. And then I told her today, the lady that she was, I said, well, what was you worrying about the house? She says, well, I just remember the house. I said, I thought you would remember the people that lived there. Because I recall the people's names. Like I say, if my name was Mary Helen, they would say, hello, Mary, or Mary Helen, or Helen Berry. Well, I knew a lot of people by the first name because my grandmother, she would call, well, hello, Nan. I would say, how are you, Miss Nan? That's all I would know. I wouldn't know the last name, period, unless somebody said, that's Mrs. So-and-so. That's the way, and my mother used to say, how do you remember? I says, well, that's what I'm gifted with, supposed to be my memory.
Excellent memory.
Yeah, and I says, I remember people, what they did, and all of that.
Well, I appreciate the time that you've
given
me.
Been helpful.
If there's anybody that you think I should talk to, that still may not have been there all the time, but you think would be helpful, I've got a lot of people. If you got a second, let me just, I know I keep signing off and then keep dragging it out, but I'll show you who I'm trying to get a hold of. I've talked to James T. Graham.
Yeah.
And I'd like to talk to Paul, his brother.
Yeah.
And there's the mama. She's not, Henry Mack.
Yeah.
Ella Sanders.
Now, she was up there.
Sam Parker.
That's his sister. She's his sister.
Miss McLean has decided not to talk, but we had a good Naomi Carr.
Well, now Miss Carr wouldn't know too much about nothing like that. She came on in later years.
See, I don't.
See, they, she don't know anything about it now.
Birdie
lived up in there.
Yeah. Margaret and Henry Ellis.
They didn't know too much. They're a little younger than I am, but
Elizabeth Oglesby, who you say we've talked about her, Annabelle Williams.
Well, what would they call on her? She came later when all this was mostly over.
Oh, really? See, I don't know much.
The bottom was still there, but see, we were born here. Annabelle, probably, I don't know if Annabelle was born here in Chicago. But I mean, say, these are people that came into Frankfurt later on. They weren't reared here up in the bottom like the majority of us.
Ah, okay.
That's what I'm trying
to
say.
They came late.
Yeah. See, I'm through the bottom, going to church and going to school.
Yeah, and these people so far that I've mentioned really.
Yeah, some
not,
of those,
Of course, Ellsworth Marshall Jr. I've talked to.
Yeah.
George and Leona Childs, but somebody said they were gone for a long time.
Well, but they were here when during the bottom area.
Okay.
This is my nephew, and he's married to her.
Well, do I have the right East 4th Street?
Yes, East 4th Street.
Okay, I haven't found a phone number. Are they in the book? Or?
It's in her mother's name, Sadie Wooldridge.
Sadie Wooldridge.
And listen, don't you tell her I told you.
Oh.
They just write Sadie Woods if you want to do it.
Okay.
And just tell somebody, say, you don't know. But write Sadie Woods you down.
You have a pen, so I don't even have a pen on me.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, I should give you a telephone number.
Oh, got it. That
223.
Okay, thank you. 223
1402.
Would Sadie have been related to Ernest Wooldridge?
Sister-in-law.
Ah, okay. Here's what she has.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, if she asked, she said, someone was talking to me. Don't tell that you got
I've talked, me. Okay. I've talked
say,
to
someone I don't know. Somebody gave me you all's name. Because now George would remember a whole lot because He had relatives up in their area too. Now George, we might remember a whole lot.
Hey, this is your sister, isn't it, Catherine?
No, Bessie.
Oh, I'm sorry, I've gotten the wrong tape. I tried to talk to her. She's not feeling good. She got an artificial hip that ain't doing right at all.
Catherine Fletcher?
Helen Taylor.
Helen Taylor, yeah. Now, they are sisters.
Yeah, I haven't been able to reach Miss Fletcher, but I did talk to Miss Taylor, and she's agreed to talk to me.
Well, good.
Maggie, I spoke to Miss Knott.
Yeah.
And I had a good conversation with her. And Maddie Brown?
Yes. Well, see, they came later, but see, they're not people that was brought up, that was in this all along. See, they came from Green Hill somewhere. They weren't down here. Now, Mary Chenault, now she was Papa Jazz's sister.
Ah, okay.
Now, she would know.
Yeah, and she said, I finished the first draft on my urban renewal paper, and I sent it over to Helen Evans over at the... And she said she would look at that and she'd think about it. Yeah. She seemed a little reluctant.
But she's not an outgoing person.
Isaac Fields, I talked to Isaac. Yeah. And Charles, I haven't reached yet. Charles Fields.
He works at Blue Bonnet, you know.
Yeah. Is that the Blue Bonnet up on Louisville?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Howard, Carletta.
Yes.
On Langford. Yeah. I haven't got their number yet. Henry Sanders, who I did speak with.
Yeah.
Of course, yourself.
Yeah.
Dr. Cheney knows a lot, but he's going to write some things. He said, I'd rather write some things to you than talk. George, I spoke with.
Yeah.
Mary Emma Ellis, she's agreed to talk to me, but her, I think it was her daughter-in-law, Buddy's wife, died. Buddy I'd like to talk to because he drove for Dr. Underwood, didn't he?
Yes, he was down there. I don't know about it, Buddy, but George Halleck drove for Dr. Underwood mostly. Buddy might have in the lab. I don't recall Buddy driving for Dr. Underwood.
Those are some of the people. And James Calhoun, now I talked to him and he said he will call me. But he is willing to talk to me. But he was down there. And I've got some white people I hope to talk to. Frank Lewis is still around, and he helped on the urban. The only man who's turned me down, there's only been one man who turned me down. The white man who ran the urban renewal, Charles R. Perry.
You don't mean.
He said no, he would not talk.
He afraid he would give away something.
Well, and he was hated. I mean, he was out and out hated by people, and I suspect he doesn't want to walk through a lot of old ground.
That made me nuts. I wouldn't want to either.
And Gene Hines, if I can find Gene, he's gone, left the community. He came in after Charles Perry left, and he ran Urban Renewal, and I'd like to talk to Gene. Oh, Jack Rohr was big in Urban Renewal, and Frank Sauer.
Frank Sauer.
And he's another one that keeps his cards real
close. He used to be the... mayor, wasn't it?
Yeah, and his son John was mayor.
Yeah, John. Is Frank Sauer still living?
Oh, yeah, he's still alive.
Well, he's down on Wilson Street.
Yeah, down at the very end.
Yeah, I didn't know it.
Yeah, he's still alive.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people that didn't care too much for him. They said he turned turncoat.
Yeah, he was tied in with the Sullivans, Pat and Paul Sullivan. A lot of resentment against the Sullivans,
too,
because they was big and running town.
Well, see, but I have no... See, Pat Sullivan won because he knew my family and background. He's the one letting me have the money from the bank. And so when people do nice things, because I tell you, it's within you how you carry yourself. With a lot of people, you're not trustworthy. I wouldn't trust my own people myself.
Yeah. Everybody gives me a little bit different aspect of the story because they all had different experiences.
Yeah.
Well, those are the people I'm trying to talk to.
Yeah.
Maybe some of them weren't raised here or didn't grow up and go through here, but they might be helpful.
You can always find something from someone.
I want to do something that's honest and right, and hopefully it'll turn out accurate. I'll send you a copy of the first draft of my urban renewal, and it deals just with urban renewal from about 1958 to 65, and let you take a look at that and see what you think. But if you hear people, your friends, talking about this crazy white guy, he's okay.
No, they wouldn't do that. Now, because I'm just like this. If they don't want to be bothered, they would tell you, because the majority of us are honest. Because when they word me, when it first came out in the paper, this lady told some people on the campus wanted to take it up themselves. And this girl said, I got the person, say, Lord, she can tell you everything, and tell you where people live, and tell you what they did, and everything. And she called me, and I said, no, indeedy, I don't care to be bothered, because I'm going to tell you how I said, I knew it was something about off the campus. They snooped it, and I don't want to be involved no snooping person.
Well, I'll tell you, one of the reasons I'm doing this is when you all pass on, nobody's going to remember.
History.
It's going to be gone, and yeah. I think it'd be a real tragedy if it didn't. These tapes will be turned over to the library and archives. You know that big building they got out on the connector?
Yeah.
And tapes are going to go to the Oral History Commission, and they'll be available for the use of scholars and researchers. There is a...
Well, I can show it if I can find it real quick.
I'll talk later. We're coming up on time, and I don't want you to shoot.